Hello and welcome to The Short Squeeze, a podcast about what's happening in financial markets in the coming week. I'm Lucy Battersby, editor of Markets Live, a daily live blog on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age websites. This week we're doing a stock take of which Australian retailers are in hibernation and if there are some that may never wake again. We're going to have a look at the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing program, how China is slowly letting people move around again, and the measures of economic damage which are coming out this week. And what exactly will that enormous, the biggest, the best stimulus program passed by Congress over the weekend end up doing? Today I'm joined by IG Markets analyst Kyle Rodder. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning.
So we'll first have a look at the stocks listed on the ASX, the retail, some of the retailers that are listed. Yeah. Some of them have been pretty bad investments for shareholders. Yesterday I was having a look at the Myer share price.
Yeah.
It floated at something over $3, close to $4 a few years ago, and was at 10.5 cents on Friday. And late on Friday night, like 8:15, 8:30 p.m., when a lot of newspapers have already gone to print, they announced that their stores would be closing for 4 weeks.
And laying off a lot of staff.
Yeah, they're joining that hibernation. So it was curiously timed. But also at 10.5 cents, their market cap is now only about $83 million.
Yeah, it's a fall from grace. It's really, really quite sad. I mean, you had a lot of people calling it a screaming buy at 40 cents. It's one of those companies that's going to find it very difficult to come out at the other end of this crisis, considering that they were already in dire straits beforehand.
Yeah, and they join a throng of other retailers that have gone into hibernation. Last week we had Michael Hill. I think City Chic has gone into hibernation as well. I don't know, what's the outlook for the retail sector going to be?
Well, I mean, it's just so difficult to read right now, isn't it? Because, I mean, this whole economic sudden stop brought about by the COVID-19 crisis doesn't have an end date. I think it was Anthony Fauci who quoted over the weekend when speaking about, US President Donald Trump's ambitious attempts to get the US economy back online by Easter, was that, we don't set the timeline, the virus sets the timeline. And this is a really concerning thing now, is that we don't know how long this will last. The Prime Minister tells us 6 months, but it could be longer. So we're looking at a protracted period where these companies will be out of business. And depending on the stimulus response from the government, could be at severe risk of going bankrupt in that time.
I was having a chat to our retail reporter, Dominic Powell, this morning. He said there were estimates that about 100,000 people who work in the retail sector were stood down over the past week, which is an enormous amount of people. And it made me realise there's a very close marriage between whatever stimulus programs the government announces and the future of the retail sector, because the government has to give out money for people to spend, and the retail sector is the biggest private employer. So
yes, and of the most vulnerable people as well. I mean, the biggest issue we've had in the last few years is underemployment in this economy, and that's dominated by part-time workers and casuals who tend to be, who dominate the services industry, particularly the retail sector. So I think this is really what the government's trying to do here, is to try to avoid that vicious cycle that occurs when businesses start going under, because you obviously, see the supply side fall, but at the same time, demand's hit because people no longer have jobs and ability to spend more, which ends up, like I said, in a vicious cycle. So it's a very, very fine balance at the moment that the government's trying to undertake. And this will really be the key. If we get out of this unscathed and if we have a decent recovery at all at the end of it, if we can keep just things in hibernation as planned or not.
And he pointed out there's a really distinct split between the retailers that have gone into hibernation and were already doing pretty badly because retail was already under pressure. Mm. You've got a lot of those shops that are, fashion, jewellery, kind of real discretionary.
Yeah.
But there are some retailers who haven't gone into hibernation who are still doing very well. Super Retail Group, Wesfarmers, Kogan. And I must admit, working from home over the past week, I've been pretty glad that the Office Works down the road has been open.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, those staples side of the economy or consumer equation is one area that probably one of the sole areas where you might see the sector buffeted somewhat by the change in consumer behaviour. So I mean, there's obviously victors out of all of that, and you know, fortunately too, we've got both Coles and Woolworths talking about how much, you know, the numbers of employees that they'll put on through this crisis too, which adds a little bit. But obviously, the net sum of all of this is you know, a lot of people out of work in a retail sector, clearly in a lot of pain.
And then we you know, there's always the debate, is JB Hi-Fi discretionary or staple?
Yeah, I'm thinking more and more staples as we speak. We all need a mobile phone. We all need appliances in our house, particularly when we get rather bored. You know, I'd be interested to see how they report, you know, in their next earnings release. But I get the sense that they'll probably hold up a little bit better than some other companies, considering. And I've visited there a couple of times already myself to try and pick up some stuff for the new home office. So, I mean, surely they'll be doing all right.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Carl. And we want to have a look at what the US Federal Reserve has been doing over the past week. They've got the most fantastically named program. Carl, what's their program called?
Markets are referring to it as QE Infinity. It's a limitless at QE program, and really, if you look at what the Fed's announced in the last week or so, it's you know, a veritable alphabet soup of different policy measures, not just QE, but you've also got different programs set up to try and provide direct credit into financial markets and to the corporate sector in the United States. You know, long acronyms like PMCCF and MSMCCF, and then you've got the buyouts of ABSs and the MMLF facilities. It's quite amazing that what they're trying to do to keep financial markets running.
And what are you mentioned that there was they've been doing something that is quite unconventional for a central bank to be doing.
Yeah,
can you tell us
yeah.
a bit more about that?
Well, I mean, I've kind of tongue in cheek referred to it as the US Federal Reserve behaving something like an investment bank. So. One very curious thing out of all this is, one, they have announced quantitative easing to infinity. So normally when they do announce these programs, there'll be a set limit, a set quantity of assets they're trying to purchase. And typically, or in the past, they've been government bonds and then mortgage-backed securities. They've expanded those purchases now to commercial mortgage-backed securities too. So, you know, big commercial properties, debt in those markets to try and support liquidity there and you know, ensure the ample supply of credit through that part of the economy. But what they've also done is set up numerous credit facilities, one of the most conspicuous of which is the Primary Market Corporate Credit Facility. That's the PMCCF that I was referring to earlier. And effectively, this extends credit directly into US corporates to borrow directly from the central bank outside of the primary dealer network and other intermediaries in the financial system. Now, the reason why this is interesting is that it goes against the US Federal Reserve Act in terms of what it is allowed to do, which is lend directly into private markets. And the way that the Fed's gotten around this is creating special purpose vehicles to be able to pump the credit through to these companies to be able to effectively stabilize the financial system. And we spoke about it last week, the stresses in the credit markets, you know, the risk of a credit crunch in the US financial system. It's all in effect of trying to avoid that. So we've got the Fed effectively trying to work around its own limitations to be able to support the US economy here, not just with, you know, extraordinary purchases of assets, but also providing direct lines of credit into the US economy.
It sounds like they're really mixing the lines between private and public banking institutions.
The whole system's changing right before our eyes. There's the cliche in financial markets that, you know, some decades nothing happens at all, and then in, you know, decades happen in weeks, effectively. We're seeing that right now where the whole system is changing before our very eyes, and it's not going to be the same after we get out the other side.
All right, Carl. It'll be fascinating to see how that one turns out in the next few weeks.
Absolutely.
IG is a world-leading online trading provider, giving traders access to over 16,000 global financial markets on our award-winning platforms. With over 45 years of experience, you can trade with confidence when with IG. Visit ig.com.au for more information. All trading involves risks. Issued by IG Markets Limited, AFSL 220440.
Welcome back. We're going to have a quick chat about how China's lockdown is going. There was some, over the weekend, people in Wuhan, which was initially locked down on... what was it, January, February? 21st?
Yeah, 2 months lockdown effectively through January and February, I think to the start of March.
Yeah. So they've started letting people move around outside again. It's nowhere back to normal. The trains were allowed to stop there again over the weekend, and the subway's going. But you're not allowed to get out of Wuhan yet. You can get in, but you can't get out.
Right, like and the Hotel California.
On April 8th, so I think that's another 2 weeks, they're gonna start letting people leave again, and the airport will reopen.
Right.
China says that it's getting back to normal. They reckon nearly 100% of the supermarkets and the chain stores are back. But we're going to get some data this week that's going to really show us the impact of that 2 month shutdown, aren't we?
Yes, yes. Well, it was a real catalyst for the, you know, I guess mad march that we had and we're still having, I suppose, which was those Chinese manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMI numbers that we did speak about on the podcast about a month ago. It just sort of showed the extent of the shutdown. You know, manufacturing PMI at the time came in at 35.7, non-manufacturing PMI came at 29.6. And to point that into context, that's the composite, when you add those two things together and average them out, came in at an all-time low. So business activity was at an all-time low, as far as records go, in the Chinese economy. And just to put, again, into context what the PMI is that, you know, you've got a scale of 0 to 100, 50 being, neutral. Anything above 50 says that activity, manufacturing activity or non-manufacturing activity is expanding. Anything below that, it's contracting. We saw a huge contraction in business activity in China a month ago. We get the next updated set of figures from China this week. So we'll be able to get a bit of a pulse on whether the Chinese economy is returning to normal or not, or whether they are still obviously suffering through this shutdown in quite a material way.
So what period will the figures that come out, I think it's on Tuesday, what period will that cover?
It'll cover up to the 20th, a month up to the 20th of March. So survey that we see there, it'll be up to that period. So we will capture some of that lockdown period still. But the Chinese economy is slowly, very slowly being reopened. Now, Wuhan, and Hubei province, not so much, but more broadly speaking, very slowly the last few weeks. So there's the hope that perhaps we'll start to see some green shoots there. I suppose by way of indication, the Chinese manufacturing PMI numbers forecast by economists to come in at about 44.9. The non-manufacturing figure is at 42.1, the forecast. In saying that, the estimates were very similar the last time around. So we'll be interested to see if they come somewhere in line with expectations this time, or whether there once again is has been a much bigger slowdown in Chinese economic activity than has been at least previously thought.
And if there's any country that can turn the taps off and then suddenly turn it back on again and have a V-shaped recovery, it'd be China.
Well, we should hope anyway.
Yes. All right. And we should also have a talk about the issue that was dominating stock market sentiment last week, which was the US economic stimulus program, the $2 trillion program that Yes. the White House was trying to get through Congress. They finally came to an agreement. It was a unanimous vote, ended up being on Saturday morning our time, Friday evening US time. Mm. It's going to see just, I was having a look at the figures, it's just billions of dollars. $62 billion alone for the airline sector, $350 billion for small businesses, and they're doing helicopter payments of $1,200 for low and middle income earners.
Yes, $2,400 up to hospitals, families as well.
Yeah, it's going to pump a heap of money into the economy.
Massive.
They also noted, senior politicians were saying that this is unlikely to be the last package.
Mm.
But what I found curious was the market response, because the markets ended up closing lower. And they also had the lowest trading volumes in 3 weeks. In fact, for the Dow Jones, it was the lowest trading volumes in 4 weeks on Friday. So what, had people already factored in the stimulus package getting passed, and then when the event happened, it was a bit ho-hum?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. We saw the markets run higher on the anticipation that the package would eventually get passed. First went through the Senate on, I think it was Wednesday, or maybe Tuesday our time. So when that sort of went through, it was considered a matter of process just before the deal did get signed into law and passed through the House of Representatives and then get signed into law by President Trump. But we did see, on the basis of that rally last week, much lower volumes than what's been seen for the last month or so throughout this sell-off on Wall Street. If you look at the the 30-day average of daily volume in US stocks. They were for most of last week, it was considerably below the 30-day average. And from a technical point of view, that's always a little bit of a scary sign, because it suggests that the conviction of the sellers is much higher than those who are buying, which says that the market is still generally in a little bearish state of mind. And that was sort of the debate that ended emerged last week, was this sort of 10% rally, as we saw it into the close, or 11% rally we saw last week in US stocks. Is that a turnaround, or is this just something that happens in volatile markets sometimes, a dead cat bounce, so to speak? And that sort of lower volume suggests that perhaps the conviction was lacking behind that particular move, and that maybe we're still in for a little bit of pain going forward.
Well, there's also another set of creeping up behind everyone is another set of numbers that's quite scary, and that's the infection and the death rates in the US from the coronavirus.
Yeah.
So maybe people are starting to follow that set of numbers a bit closer.
I still think, fundamentally speaking, the biggest indicator will be that curve that everyone talks about in terms of coronavirus cases. The United States has not been able to manage to get on top of the outbreak yet. So I don't think until we see the number of daily cases truly decline and a trend emerge, that markets will feel confident enough to really take serious risks.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you.
This has been The Short Squeeze, a podcast produced by The Age and Sydney Morning Herald in conjunction with IG Markets. You can follow daily stock market news on our live blog. And feel free to subscribe to this podcast via your podcast platform. You can catch us again next week.